It's pleasure to have Lori back after a 2 week hiatus, and we're going to push off our Mechitza class until next week. And we'll have this week on Chanukah, and this afternoon or evening, depending on where you're living, lecture is being sponsored by Mimi and Byron Shore, neighbors of ours in Toronto, in memory and the observance of Yahrzeit Bo Ba'Yom, of Mimi's father, Naftali Ben Mendel, the Shamash and Avonlea. We should be able to celebrate in person happy occasions. Thank you, Mimi and Byron. Okay, and Lori, Vakasha, Chanukah, woman and Chanukah, Af Hema Yuv Oto HaNes.
Well, it's just the beginning. And I also want to thank you, of course, Rabbi Jay, for making this possible, and thank all of you for making time in your Hanukkah for some Torah. You know, the true light is the light of Torah. So I'm glad to have you all here. Thank you to the Shore family for your sponsorship of this shiur. Okay, I'm going to start sharing screen in a moment, but I just want to take a straw poll. I guess a lot of you aren't on your cameras, so I might have to be in the chat. I just want to know how many of the women here, or the women connected to the men here, light their own Chanukiah on Hanukkah. Okay, we've got a yes, we've got a no. Okay, yep. We've got some no's. We've got a lot of no's. Wow, this is kind of fun. I almost want to do this worldwide, you know, just get a sense. Oh, that's nice, taking turns with your husband. Okay, so there's a range of responses. Ooh. So some of you have always led your own, some of you don't, some of you just started. There's a real range of responses here, which is fun. The main focus of our shiur tonight is not this, but here's another question for you. This is something that people might feel a little more squeamish about answering, but I'm going to go for it anyway. Same question for women about yourselves and for men about women close to you. Saying Hallel each day of Hanukkah.
Yes.
Okay, we have a yes, we have a no, we have a yes, we have always no, yes, no.
I agree.
Okay.
This is lots of fun. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. This is okay. So we've got a range. Oh, I feel like that is probably someone wrote here on the days I daven, which I think is probably true for a lot of women in particular. Fascinating. Okay. What we're going to talk about today, we're going to be talking more about Hallel than about lighting Hanukkah candles. And to do that, we have the following. Our shiur is going to have a structure. We're going to start by talking about Hallel. We're going to shift gears and talk about the principle that stands behind candle lighting, which was the first thing I asked about, Af Hen Hayu Be'otoneis. They meaning women too, or indeed, or including the miracle. And then we're going to see if we can put those two pieces together to talk about what it means for women to be saying Hallel on Hanukkah. Okay, which is also going to give us, along the way, we're going to get some insight into what it means for men to be saying Hallel on Hanukkah as well. Don't worry. Okay, so let me try to move. I always feel like I'm entering into a risky moment when I move to share screen mode. Let's go for it and hope that it goes smoothly. Okay, please work well. And yes, okay, this doesn't look right to you yet, but I see that it's going to be what I want. Okay, we're going to start with the Gemara about Hallel, to get some little background about Hallel. And it's actually pretty interesting. You ever thought about where Hallel comes from or how it gets started? So the Hallel we say is composed of a series of Pirkei Tehillim. There's actually even a little interplay within the Gemara about that itself, because did Hallel really only get started with David HaMelech, or did it come before? And it seems like it came before, in which case it's kind of an interesting question. What exactly was being said? How do we know it comes before? It comes from right here. Tana Rabbanan. Hallel ze mi amaro. This Hallel, who said it? Rabbi Elazar Omer, Moshe Yisrael Amruhu B'Sha'a Shamdu Al Hayam. So Rabbi Elazar said, Moshe and the children of Israel said it at the moment when they stood at the sea. Hem Amru, by the way, as I'm going through this, we're going to see a few different suggestions. I want you to think, as I'm going through this, what the common denominator is going to be among the examples we're going to see here of people potentially pioneering Hallel. Okay, so Moshe and B'nai Israel said it when they stood by the sea. They, B'nai Israel or Moshe Rabbeinu, said, Lo lanu Hashem lo lanu. This is something we say in the full Hallel, right? It's not for our sake, not for our sake, God, that you should help us. It's rather for your own sake. Mishiva ruach hakodesh ve'amra lahen. And then the divine spirit responds to them, Lamani lamani say, yes, I will do it for my own sake. Okay. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Yoshua of Yisrael amaruhu b'sha'a shamdu alehen malchei Kana'an. Yoshua and B'nai Israel said it at the time at which the kings of Kana'an stood over them, or they were facing them. Hem amru lo lanu u'mishiva, the same dialogue. The people say, not for our sake. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, through this Ruach HaKodesh says, yes, I'm doing it for my own name in the world. Rabbi Elazar Hamodai Omer, Dvorah Barak amaruhu. B'sha'asha amad aleihem Sisra. So Dvor and Barak said it when they faced off with Sisra. Hey, Mamru lo lanu, Ruach HaKodesh, same dialogue. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, Chizkiah, B'siyato amru, Chizkiah and his helpers said it, at the time, B'sha'asha amad aleihem Sancheiriv, facing off against Sancheiriv. Rabbi Akiva says, Hananya, Mishael, and Azariah say it, meaning Hallel, B'sha'asha amad aleihem Nebuchadnezzar harasha, when they're facing Nebuchadnezzar. And Rabbi Yosef Glili says, Mordechai and Esther say it at the time when they're facing Haman harasha. Okay, now there are two primary ways we can read this particular passage. We can read it as telling us that there's a disagreement about who first said Hallel, or we can read it as kind of cumulative, as in each sage who's being quoted is adding another example of an important group of leaders or an epic in Jewish history where Hallel was said. Now, I asked you if you could try to give me a common denominator here. If someone wants to try unmuting themselves and suggesting a common denominator, I'd love to hear what you come up with. What would be a common denominator of these recitations of Hallel? Okay, redemption, geula. From what
time? There was a time when they feared that they were going to be destroyed or wiped out.
Okay, yafe. It's not just any redemption, right? Redemption can come in different levels. It can take different characters. This is redemption from facing an existential threat, right? Here it really seems like these hallels are coming at these pivotal moments when the Jewish people is in threat. And it's at this moment that Hallel is said. Now, one of the things that's a little ambiguous from the passage is, are they only saying it when they're saved? Or are they also saying it, as it were, before they're saved? Are they actually praising God, as it were, when they're asking him for help, which is sort of what the passage sounds like, right? And not just like they're praising God after the salvation comes. So Hallel here is being associated with salvation from a great threat. Does that jibe with your experience of every time you say hallel? When do we say hallel?
Joyous
holidays.
We say it with a lot of holidays, right? This doesn't sound exactly like this passage. So we're going to have to figure that out.
Also, there were women in all your examples.
Ah, yeah. Well, you know, women are part of the Jewish people, right?
Miriam said it out loud. Miriam said it. Devorah said it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So it is absolutely the case that women are taking lead roles in a number of these, and women are part of the people regardless. Okay. And that's definitely an important thing to notice. Okay. Now, summarizing what we just saw, it says in the Gemara, V'chachamim omrim nevi'im shebineihem tiknu lahem liYisrael shehu omrim oto al kol perek v'perek al kol tzara v'tzara. That the prophets amongst them enacted for Israel that they should say Hallel at every chapter of history. I think it would be like a momentous chapter. And every tsar of a tsar, when facing an enemy, shalot aveil am Yisrael, this is euphemistic, okay? Whenever any terrible thing that it shouldn't come would come. V'lich shenigalin omrim oto agulatan. And when they are redeemed, they say it at the redemption. So this summarizes what we've seen. And it really does sound like the same halal is being said to get salvation and to celebrate salvation. And that still doesn't account for the holidays. Now, to come for the holidays, we have another Talmudic passage. This one comes from Masechet Arachim. The Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yitzchak Tzadak. Rabbi Yochanan says as follows. Shmona asar yamim sheyachid gomer behen et halal. There are 18 different days on which an individual says a full halal, right? We have something called partial halal, like what's said on Rosh Chodesh, the special Rosh Chodesh we just finished today, or we're finishing. Some of you are still in the middle of it. I'm done. But those of you who are still in the middle of Rosh Chodesh, right, usually on Rosh Chodesh, you only say part of halal, and because it's Hanukkah, you get to say the whole thing. What are the days where we say a full halal? Shmona Yimei Chag, Chag in rabbinic terminology is, of course, Sukkot. Shmona Yimei Chanukah. Interesting that Chanukah slides in here. We'll come back to that. Yom Tov HaRishon Shel Pesach, the first day of Pesach. Remember, the rest of Pesach, we say the half halal, the partial halal. The Yom Tov Shel Atzeret, and on Shavuot. So we have here, look at this. We have Sukkot. Are you sensing a commonality? We have Sukkot. We have Pesach, the very beginning, and we have Shavuot. Which of these things does not seem to belong in this picture? Hint, I'll highlight it. Hanukkah, right? The three foot festivals or pilgrimage festivals are all here. And then Hanukkah gets stuck in, which is kind of interesting. And then the Gemara goes on and it says, well, actually, you know, in Chutz La'aretz, outside of Israel, in the Gola, in the diaspora, we are in exile, we're actually saying it also on Yom Tov Sheni, right? So Pesach, as opposed to just being the first day during the full halal, it's also the second day would be the full halal. So that it adds a number of days. But this doesn't seem to be quite like what we saw previously. What we saw previously in Masechet Pesachim, we summarized it saying that it was related to great redemption. What we see here in Masechet Arachim, is a halal that seems to be connected with, well, seasons, right? Seasonality. Happy days, like you guys said. What's going on? Well, actually, the Brisker Rav has a very nice statement he makes about this. He says, basically, he says, yeah, you know, there are two types of halal. There are two types of halal. Dal kol perek v'perek, hainu yudchet yamim akfuim. He says, when it says in the Gemara that on every perek v'perek, at every chapter, that's referring to the set days of halal that go with the holidays. And when it says, I'll call tsara v'tsara, every time they face sorrow, that's a different halal. Okay? V'hainu d'cholim lamar halal, kol zman sh'nigalim mitzara, that we say halal whenever we're redeemed. So he's basically saying, yeah, there are indeed two halal tracks. They're the seasonal holiday halal track, which actually Ramban connects to the songs that the Levim would say over the Korbanot on the holidays. And there is the miraculous redemption track. Now, actually, this is a little more interesting than it seems at first. Let me give you an example. Pesach. Which is Pesach? Is Pesach the miraculous redemption track? I mean, it showed up. Moshe Rabbeinu Alayam showed up earlier, miraculous redemption track, or is Pesach holiday track? Well, actually, in Pesach, it's actually really neat if you think about it, because what do we do on Pesach that we usually don't do? On Lila Seder, we say halal at night as part of the Seder. On the Yantav Rishon, the first Yantav of Pesach, we have both tracks. We have a night track of halal, a nighttime recitation of halal, which represents perhaps the redemptive track. And we have the daytime recitation of halal, which represents perhaps the standard festival track. How did Hanukkah get in here? It's interesting that Hanukkah did not show up in the examples we saw so far of the redemptive track, and actually got stuck with the festive track. And that's particularly striking because in the continuation of the Talmudic passage we were looking at before from Arachin, it says as follows. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yitzadak, right? That's the beginning. And he continues and he says, well, what about Hanukkah? Hanukkah, Mishum Nisa. Well, actually, the reason we say Hallel on Hanukkah is because it's a miracle. So it got listed here and it gets the full Hallel treatment. But even though we say it year in, year out for 8 straight days, it's still in a certain sense considered more of the miracle track, perhaps, than the holiday track. And in fact, those of you who have ever learned the Rambam in the Mishneh Torah, there's something fascinating that he does. And what he does that's fascinating actually might be explained by the Gemara we're going to look at in a second. The Talmud, when it talks about what Hanukkah is, at the end of the, you know, my Hanukkah section, talking about the Hanukkah story, it says as follows. Kava'um ba'asa'um yamim tovim b'halal v'hoda'ah. The days of Hanukkah become established as, by definition, that was the title of this year, days of Hallel and Todah, days of praise and thanksgiving. The definition of the days of Hanukkah is days of praise, days of Hallel. And Rambam, in fact, takes a very interesting step. And when he organizes the halachot in the Mishneh Torah, the laws of Hallel show up in Hanukkah. Not in Sukkot, where they're really, really important. Not in Pesach, where they're also important. But specifically in Hanukkah. The home for his discussion of Hallel is in Hanukkah. Hanukkah, the core definition of Hanukkah is a time of Hallel. Okay, now you might be starting to think about where we're going to be going with this in terms of women, but first we have to just clarify what's going on with women in Hallel in general. In general, are women obligated to say Hallel? Now, on the one hand, as I think Susan pointed out, women are there in the Talmud in a number of the cases of Hallel we saw. And yet, the Mishnah in Sukkah, when it talks about a man having someone else read Hallel for him, it says, Misha haya eved o isha o katan makrinoto, someone who has a bondsman or a woman or a minor reciting Hallel for them, word for word, o neacharehen responds, says it for himself after they say it, ma shehen omrim, what they say. In other words, they don't discharge his obligation. If a woman, let's say you have a married couple, and let's say the woman is learned and the husband is not learned, which is a possibility that the Talmud raises, okay? And the woman is familiar with Hallel and the man is not. And she recites Hallel and he responds word for word. He cannot discharge his obligation in Hallel just from listening to her, the way we ordinarily would through a halachic mechanism that we call shomea ka'one, that someone who listens is akin to someone who speaks. And the reason he can't do that is because we have another halachic principle that you have to be obligated on the same level as someone else to discharge their obligation. And here we say, and this is Tosfot summarizing, Eved ve'isha nami lo mechayvi b'halel. Women, like bondsmen, are not considered to be obligated in Hallel. Why not? Generally speaking, Hallel would be a classic example of a positive time-bound commitment. Think about it. We've been talking about how one of the major occasions on which you're going to recite Hallel has to do with seasons, seasonality, these holidays, it keeps coming up. The same way that Lulav and Sukkot, which is closely associated with Hallel, is a positive time-bound commandment. So too, the Hallel itself on Sukkot is a positive time-bound commandment. And if so, say Tosfot, then women are exempt. Okay, that was step one. We're gonna set it aside for a moment. Okay, so far what we've seen, to summarize, is the law of Hallel has two main tracks. The seasonality, simcha track of rejoicing, and the redemption track or the recollection, or even you could say reenactment of salvation, of Geula track. Okay, we've seen that Hallel, though it's listed with the seasons, is explained in the Talmud as being there because it's really part of the miracle track. And we've also seen that women are considered to be exempt from Hallel in general because it's a time-bound positive commandment. Okay, that's what we've got so far. One more thing, we also saw that Hanukkah is a paradigmatic day of Hallel, or each day of Hanukkah is a paradigmatic time of Hallel. Okay, let's set that aside for the moment, and let's talk about the workings of the halacha of Afhena Yubel Toanis. Let's talk about how inclusion in the miracle functions halachically to obligate women in certain mitzvot. Okay, and there are two examples that I'm not bringing here, which you might be familiar. One of those examples is the four cups on Lilas Seder. Women are obligated in drinking the four cups as a function of being part of the miracle. And a second example that we're not going to talk about in depth now is Megillah. Women are obligated to hear Megillah as a function of being part of the miracle. And the third classic example of this halacha is Hanukkah, where it says, Isha vaday madlika, a woman certainly lights Hanukkah candles. The Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, for Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said, and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is the one who tells us about this halacha in all of the three examples that I've now mentioned. Nashim chayavot b'ner Hanukkah. Women are obligated in Ner Hanukkah. How is it that we know that a woman can light? Because a woman is obligated in Ner Hanukkah, just as anyone else is. Why? Or, okay, we could argue that maybe somehow the nature of the obligation is different. But according to most halachic authorities, the halachic obligation winds up being the same. And why are women obligated? She'afhein hayu motoanis. Now, this is a five-word phrase that becomes the name, as it were, of this halacha. And four of the words are pretty straightforward to understand. Hain, female plural, they. Hayu, were. They were. Be'oto, in the same. Nice, miracle. They were in the same miracle. They were referring to women. Very straightforward. The interesting part of this phrase is the word af. Okay? And that word af becomes subject to dispute. Rashi suggests that af means especially or indeed. And here what he wants to say is that women were the ones who brought the miracles about. So for example, when it comes to Pesach, it's the Nashim Tzadkaniyot, the righteous women who kept viewing of the future and convinced their husbands to continue to have children and think about what that meant for keeping the Jewish spirit alive during slavery. Then we also have Megillah, that's an easy one, is Esther. Of course, Hanukkah is a little more complicated, right? He doesn't write it here. We'll see where he writes it. If his theory is that Afhena Yuba Oto Anes reflects women bringing a miracle about, it's a little harder for us to know what that means when it comes to Hanukkah. We'll come back to that in a sec. Okay, Tosfot read it differently. I told you there's a disagreement about the word Af, and Tosfot say that that's a difficult reading that Rashi is suggesting. They say the Keshet, it's difficult because the language of Af, Mashmashin tefilot, it makes it sound like women are secondary. Af means like even women were part of the miracle, i.e. women too were part of the miracle, not the major players. And what they think this means is that women were also, and this is what we saw in the stories, women were part of Am Yisrael that faced an existential threat. And when women are part of Am Yisrael that faced an existential threat, as in the case of Purim and the mitzvah of Megillah, as in the case of Pesach and the mitzvah of four cups, or as in the case of Hanukkah with candlelighting, women face the threat along with men. Therefore, the miracle hit women the same way. Therefore, women should be obligated in mitzvot that reflect the miracle in the same way. Okay, so that's a real disagreement about the nature of women being included. Are women included here because women are a part of the Jewish people that were affected by the miracle? Or are women being included here because women had a unique role to play in bringing the miracle about? And a little tangent, just because it's fascinating, there's a lot of discussion about what it would mean for the women to be responsible for the Hanukkah miracle. Again, Esther is pretty straightforward. Nashim Sat Kaniot B'Pesach, the righteous women in Egypt, there's a lot of Midrashim. What's going on with Hanukkah is a little harder to see. So one of the names that comes up, I guess you could probably imagine, would be Yudit. Yudit is one of the names that come up. The story of Yudit is actually really complicated. It's hard to date that story. It's an apocryphal work about Yudit. It's not clear if that's exactly what we're talking about. But there's actually another story. And very quickly, because we have to get back to our main discussion, and yet it's so interesting. Rashi, in another place, Rashi, when he talks about Hanukkah, starts hinting at another story. And the truth is that this story actually has deep relevance for us today. Rashi says, "Shegazru Yevanim al kol betulot hanisuot lihi ba'el letafsar tchila," that the Seleucid Greeks made a decree that all the virgin women, on their basically before getting married, they would have to sleep with the military commander first. And a woman somehow brought the miracle about in protest of this. Now, this is a known thing that happened in many societies in history. The French term for it is droit de seigneur. And the idea that the first knight goes to a leader, if you think about what that means, if you just take a moment, think about what a Jewish wedding is. If there's a central halachic effect of kiddushin at a wedding, the central bracha, birkat erusin at a wedding, what's it all about? It's about how the woman cannot be now, how the woman now is only permitted to sleep with the one who has betrothed her and not with any other man. It's about that they've now formed a relationship in which she exclusively is going to be with him. The idea that a ruler would be sleeping with each woman, dafka on her wedding night, if you start to think about it, it's appalling, and it completely undercuts the entire thrust of the sanctity of kiddushin, of a wedding. This is still true today. I don't mean that this specific practice is necessarily true in too many places, but I mean that we still see today, if you follow some of the things that have gone on, let's say with the Boko Haram in Nigeria, or women who get displaced in Afghanistan, there's all kinds of situations where warfare is waged often on two fronts. There's a military front, and there is a sexual front of warfare against women. And that is something real that still exists. And it's something that undercuts deeply family. If you connect it also, the Xera we often talk about when we talk about the Seleucid Greeks, the Yevanim of this time, we often talk about not being able to do Brit Milah. That also knocks away, chips away at Jewish identity. But this particular decree would really undercut the entire Jewish family and continuity. It's a type of terrorism, getting at the very fabric of Jewish society. And the story goes, is actually, Ron actually connects this with you, with the name Yudit. Mehilat Tanit, which is a very important source because it's one of our earliest sources about Hanukkah. And it actually comes from that very murky, in terms of not well documented in writing, historical epic between Tanakh and more of the mainstream rabbinic literature, tells us that Batachat Haitala Matityahu Ben Yochanan HaKohen HaGadol, Matityahu had a daughter. Ukshigiaz Manali Nase, and when it came her time to marry, Ba Kastrin Litoma, the officer came to defile her. Velohi Nihuoto, and her brothers didn't let him. Vikin Umatityahu Vanov, and Matityahu and his sons were zealous for her. The Gavra Yadam Malchut Yadam, Yavan. In other words, that the impetus, the spark that gets the battle started, is the sister of the Maccabees who is about to face the officer who wants to sleep with her on her wedding night. And what's even more remarkable is that there's even a midrash that says that it's not that the Maccabees had kinah. We're not going to read this whole midrash together now because really it should be its own shiur. There's just no way to really open it up properly without spending about a half hour on it. But basically, there's a whole midrash here that basically says that she sparks the revolt. Here it gives her the name Hannah, if I'm not mistaken. Sometimes she's called Hannah, sometimes because she's called Yudit, sometimes she's the daughter of Matityahu. There's different ways the story is told. Megillat Tanit is probably the oldest recension of the story. But according to this version in Otzar Midrashim, she actually strips naked on her wedding feast before she's getting handed over. Everyone is in shock, and she basically says, why are you in shock at what I'm doing now, but you are silent as woman after woman has to suffer this kind of sexual terrorism? And that is what sparks the revolt. So the tradition or the idea that a woman specifically brought about this miracle is actually fairly well attested in some early sources, whether it was in fact the woman who sparked the revolt or just the fact that women were so directly involved in such a painful way in what our people were facing. But women were absolutely essential to this story. Okay, coming back to where we were, the halacha of Afhain. There's a lot of different theories about exactly how Afhain worked. Rav Yosef Tov Soloveitchik develops the idea that Afhain really applies not for every mitzvah, it really applies specifically for mitzvot that are about publicizing a miracle. Nirat Pashut, Dechol Hachtaima, Shel Afhain Ayubo Tones. It seems simple that this whole rationale of women being included in the miracle, Shayach Rakla Otana Mitzvot Danes Hudin, the Chalut Bifnei Atzmo Be'etzem Kiyuma Mitzvah. It's specifically mitzvot where the miracle itself is an essential factor in fulfilling the mitzvah. De'ika ba'kiyum shel nes u'pirsumei nisa, where it's fulfilling the miracle and it's publicizing the miracle. And he goes on and he gives examples, including near Hanukkah. And one of the things that he singles out as being very relevant, you might be able to think about it. What do near Hanukkah and Megillah have in common? We don't just recite the standard mitzvah formula of Asher Kidshanu Mitzvotav Tzivanu over these mitzvot, but additionally, in these cases, we also recite the bracha formula of She'asan Nisim Lavotenu, right? We make a bracha specifically about the miraculous element. On Lela Seder, when we say the Halal Lela Seder, we could argue that the bracha of Asher Ga'alanu fills a similar function. So that each of the mitzvot that are singled out as Afhain Ayu Be'oto Anes mitzvot are mitzvot where the miracle itself is singled out when it is performed. Okay, finally, we start getting into my question. And my question is pretty simple. And my guess is, I haven't been looking at the chat, but my guess is that some of you have already been anticipating it. To what extent can we extend Afhain? Is Afhain only limited to these three mitzvot? Specifically, what about the mitzvah of Halal? Now, the mitzvah of Halal on Yontif, it's pretty clear. We discussed it. That would be a time-bound positive commandment from which women are exempt. But what about the mitzvah of Halal on Hanukkah, where the way we understood it was that halal was on the miracle track? And when you have a mitzvah that's on the miracle track, we've been saying that in many cases, something I didn't say explicitly, but I should, we apply this to rabbinic level mitzvot, but there's not 100%, but pretty widespread agreement that halal is rabbinic in nature, at least as we say it. Why not? Why not say Afhain Ayu Be'oto Anes should obligate women in reciting Halal on Hanukkah, given that Halal on Hanukkah is said because of the Nes? Now, the first objection you might have to this is, well, who says that you can say Afhain about anything aside from Megillah reading, candle lighting on Hanukkah, and the four cups? That'd be a good question. Let me give you a couple of examples. Let's start with the Ramah. The Ramah talking about Purim says, Isha chayevet b'matanat le'avyonim u'mishloach manot ke'ish. A woman is obligated in shalach manas, and she's obligated in matanot le'avyonim. And guess what? Has the Mishnah Berurah explained that? Look familiar? Shekulana yubeoto anes. Right? Mishnah Berurah says, yep, afena yubeoto anes. It's not just something that's going to obligate women in hearing Megillah. It also works for Mishloach Manot, and it also works for Matanot Le'avyonim. And we have other things also. There's a custom. Okay, it's not a rabbinic level mitzvah, but there's a custom to refrain from doing the kind of labor you don't do on Chol HaMoed while the candles are lit for the first half hour. Okay? And that custom is more widespread among women than it is among men. And Magen Avraham says, Davka Nashim? Yeah, it's really for women. Lefishana sen nesa yodem. The miracle was brought about by the women. Therefore, that custom is theirs. And, you know, there's other Hanukkah stuff where we talk about the nates really making a difference. For example, eating festive meals on Hanukkah. Now, you guys have heard this. We say this all the time. But think about it. Noggin, says the Ramah says. Again, it's a custom. Okay, this is a custom and not a mitzvah. Fine. But Ramah says, Noggin lomar zmirot u'shvachot besudot shmarbim behem. On Hanukkah, there's not a chiyuv. There's not an obligation in eating meals. But the practice is that we say songs of praise and words of praise at the Hanukkah meals, and we try to have extra meals. And that makes them into a sudat mitzvah. Okay? It's not clear that there's an obligation to eat meals on Hanukkah, but we make our meals into a sudat mitzvah by bringing the Hanukkah spirit into them. Yeshim sheyesh chol gvina b'chanukah, and there are those who say you should eat cheese because hanes na'aseh b'chelav, shechila yudit et ha'oyev. Here we go. Yudit, women, milk. And the Bach takes this and he says, Nagu larbo besudot. Yeah, the custom is to have lots of meals on Hanukkah. Ubifrat hanashim, especially women, shenes nasal yadeisha, because the miracle was performed by a woman. What have we got? So what we've seen is in the case of Megillah, Hadlakat Nerot, the four cups, the Talmud is explicit that these are cases in which women are obligated in the mitzvah 100% because of the principle of Afhena Yubeotones. And we've seen that in the case of Purim, we say Afhena Yubeotones extends to obligate women also in Mishloach Manot and in Matanot Le'avyonim. And we've seen that in Hanukkah, the idea of women helping to bring about the miracle means that some of the special customs of Hanukkah are especially targeted towards women. Would it not follow that women should be saying Hallel on Hanukkah? Well, the Rambam doesn't seem to think so. Let's look at the Rambam for a minute. Remember, I told you the Rambam focuses his discussion of mitzvahs, of the mitzvah of Hallel, in his discussion of Hanukkah. V'lo Hallel shel Hanukkah bilvad hu shemidivrei sofrim. It's not only the Hanukkah Hallel that's rabbinic in nature. Ela kriyat Hallel lo lam medivrei sofrim. Hallel is always rabbinic. We say the full Hallel, but it's always rabbinic, says Rambam. The imaya mekaret Hallel katan o eved o isha, and if the person reciting the Hallel or leading in the Hallel is, among others, a woman, this is the din of the Mishnah. He, the man, cannot just discharge his obligation by listening. He's got to repeat it. Presumably, the Rambam is saying the man has to repeat it because the woman isn't obligated on the same level. And the Rambam here is talking in the middle of his Hilchos Hallel, which is in the middle of the Hilchos of Hanukkah. It seems pretty clear here that the implication is that the Hallel of Hanukkah is no different from any other Hallel, and women are exempt. Magen Avraham says that explicitly. But you know, there's a Tosfot in Sukkah that suggests something different. And Tosfos from Sukkah says like this. Mashmakan. Now the Tosfot in Sukkah is talking about Hallel on Sukkot. Okay? Mashmakan, it sounds here. De'isha p'tura mehalal de Sukkot. That a woman is exempt from Hallel on Sukkot. And also on Shavuot, Tama Mishum Mitzvata Shezman Gramahu, because it's positive and time bound. Afal Gav de Bahalal de Lele Psachim, and that's the case, even though Halal on Lele Seder, it sounds like from Arve Psachim, from the last chapter of Masechet Psachim, de Machaivi Bedale Kosot, that women are obligated, because women are obligated in the four cups. Umistama, lo tiknu dalet kosot, ela kedei lomar lehem halal. Why do we have the four cups anyway? They are intimately connected with halal, the four cups. At least two of the four cups are said over parts of halal. We have a part of halal that's in Magid. We have a part of halal that's in the halal section of the Seder. There are two cups of the four are intimately connected with halal. And Haggadah. Shani halal de Pesach. Halal of Pesach is different from halal on Sukkot. De ala nespa. Because halal on Lel HaSeder is there because of the miracle. The af hein ayu be'oto anes. And women are included in the miracle. But here, talking about Sukkot, Lolanes Amor. It's not a miracle track of Hallel. Tosfot just said that on Lel HaSeder, and by the way, this is widely accepted. Women are obligated to say Hallel on Lel HaSeder, which is embedded in the Seder itself. And women are obligated in that because of the law of Afhena Yuba Oto Anes. Now, if we say that on Lel HaSeder, which is there because of Anes, again, why shouldn't we say that about halal on Hanukkah? We saw Magen Avraham said no and Rambam said no. But you know, there are a couple of authorities who actually say yes. The Torah Rafael, this is Rav Rafael Shapira Volozhin, the Rosh Yeshiva Volozhin. He was the son-in-law of the Nitziv. He says, V'chen, halal de Hanukkah, nami chayavot, sharei mitam nesu. He says, yep. Women are obligated to say halal on Hanukkah. And when he means women are obligated to say halal on Hanukkah, he means eight times. Women are obligated to say halal on Hanukkah because it's there because it's a miracle. And Hitoru Tshuva, this is the Chatam Sofer's grandson, says, Kevan dechayvot b'nir Hanukkah dechayvim b'halal. Since women are obligated near Hanukkah, women are also obligated in halal. We can think of lighting Hanukkah as its own kind of act of halal and hodah as well, of praise and thanksgiving. So these are two significant authorities of the late 19th, early 20th century who say, yep, we're going to take Tosfot's logic and we're going to take it another step. Everyone pretty much accepts Tosfot's logic that women are obligated in halal and seder. For the same reason, Afhena Yubel Toanes, women are obligated in halal on Hanukkah. Not everybody agrees. We saw Rambam, it sounds like not. Magen Avraham, it sounds like not. Here, Rav Shlomo Auerbach says, no, not really. It's time bound and lighting is different. Why does he say lighting is different? Because the lighting, mazkir hanesh shel Hanukkah yoter mamirat halal. He says, look, the lighting is more miracle-oriented than reciting halal on Hanukkah. And there's something to that. If we think about it as talking about the miracle of the light, that is something that we're really, in a sense, reenacting when we light the Hanukkah candles. And we're talking specifically about Hanukkah then. And he notes that, you know, in halal, lonis karbo kolan yan shel Hanukkah, we're not really talking specifically about halal, about Hanukkah and Halal itself. So that's a really good reason to say no. And at the same time, you have other modern authorities like Rav Bosner, Rav Shmuel Levi Bosner, who's a great recent halachic authority, said, he's asking, Nashim chayavot kamo badlaka, are women obligated in Halal as they are in lighting candles? Vaniyoti yesh makom l'chayavano, p'divrei Tosfot. He says, you know, I think the Tosfot give us a good argument that yes, women should be obligated. So on the whole, we have many, many, many halachic authorities who will be, as it were, melamed zchut, who will judge favorably women who don't say halal on Hanukkah. Because you can say, look, It's a positive time-bound commitment, and we don't make a distinction. It's what halacha calls a low plug. We can't make a distinction between every case or people lose their footing. Women are always exempt technically from halal. Of course, a woman can say it voluntarily. But at the same time, we have other halachic authorities. Among them, those that we saw, the Tosfot suggested, at least when it comes to Pesach, they suggest the reasoning. We saw Rav Rafal of Volozhin, we saw Rav Shimon Sofer, and we saw Rav Vosner more recently. There are significant halachic authorities who say, yeah, women are obligated to recite halal on Hanukkah, which would make halal on Hanukkah a really important moment, potentially, for women's Hanukkah observance over the course of the year. Because on Hanukkah, a lot of us are very focused on candles. Sometimes it can be a challenge also to daven. There's often seems to be not that much else going on Hanukkah aside from candle lighting. Really, the other main thing that's going on is reciting halal. And according to these views that we saw, the recitation of halal is a real opportunity for men and women to connect to the miracle. That's why we recite it. And in the case of women, it's an opportunity in particular to think about the role that women have played in bringing the miracle about. Okay, time for some questions. I see there's some juicy stuff here on the chat. Rabbi Jay, you want to help me out with this?
Okay, I don't know how much. Okay, yes, yes, no, no. Always went okay. That was interesting. That is interesting. It's all these. I like all the surveys. Okay, Apaim. Okay, Ellen just commenting. Apaim. She said, you know, it's sort of strange. Like, unless you say the women are included, the women are excluded. In other words, why do you need a separate inclusion for the women? It should be obvious they're part of Klal Yisrael.
So it is obvious that. So I don't read it that way. I think it's an excellent question. The way I understand it is it's obvious that women are a part of Klal Yisrael. What's not obvious is that women should ever be obligated in a positive time-bound commandment. How can that be the case? So it's sort of saying, well, yeah, we are overriding our ordinary halachic principle by which we adjudicate these halachas, and we're overriding it. And the reason we're overriding it is because it's so significant that we recognize that women are a part of this miracle too, that to not override it would almost be to be missing out on that. Frighten Jews enough and they say halal. Oi. Rabbi Jay, I'll let you pick it up. I don't hear you.
Yeah. No. You hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay, our phone was ringing and I just didn't want to have the noise of the background. I'm sorry. Okay, frighten of Jews say halal. It's not the frightened Jews is to do tshuva if need be. You wanted me to pick up on that. I think that's what you meant, right? Sometimes we need ubechein tein pachtecha. Rav Soloveitchik said that we say on Rosh Hashanah pachad is different than yira. You know, yirat Hashem doesn't mean fear, it means awe, but pachad means fear, dread. So whatever, there is a place sometimes maybe for fear. I don't know, but that's a whole other discussion. All these halal things, Ellen again, about Rabbi Biad Ma'atim. We don't say halal on Purim. So that, Laura, you can discuss the famous Gemara, why we don't say halal on Purim.
So there's a number of different reasons they're given why not to say halal on Purim. One of them is that halal takes place in Chutz La'aretz. One of them is that that Purim takes place in Chutz La'aretz. One of them is at the end of the Purim story, we are still under non-Jewish sovereignty. And the third, which is probably the most compelling, at least to me, is that the recitation of the Megillah, the reading of the Megillah, is an act of halal. It's right there. In which case, if that is the case, then women's obligation in Megillah would be an example of Hana Yubotones, in fact, obligating women in an act of halal, exemplified by the Megillah, potentially.
Right. Okay. Zev is make a statement that I'm going to turn into a question is if Purim, in other words, Gemara does not say because the nace was hidden on Purim. In other words, people didn't know Purim. Kituni the Dorot. It took a long time for Esther to get Purim in. But it's interesting. And I'm trying to think offhand. Is something hidden? You don't say a miracle unhidden. I think during the Entebbe rescue discussion, whether the people who were in Tebi, in Entebbe, should say Hallel. I think that was part of the halachic discussion. It was sort of not, I mean, it was miraculous, but it was through very natural means. And whether, so I don't know, I have to research that a little bit. I don't recall totally.
That's actually, I would say that's an essential question behind the issue of saying Hallel on Yom Ha'atzmaut. One of the essential questions there, right? We have our tracks. We have our seasonal track and we have our miracle track. So we can't really get Yom Ha'atzmaut into the seasonal track along with Sukkot and Pesach. But Yom Ha'atzmaut could potentially be on the miracle track, but that's going to really depend on whether or not you view what happened as miraculous. And so the appropriateness of saying Hallel then really starts hinging on the way you read Jewish history.
Are you talking that within even the religious Zionist world that accepts is Hallel? In other words, right, you're raising, which is, I think, an important point we don't always make. The decision about saying Hallel does not have to be, quote unquote, a political one. You can be a big supporter of the state of Israel and think, Rav Soloveitchik, for example, was not a big fan of saying Hallel and Yom Ha'atzmaut. He was a very conservative when it came to changing anything in Tefillah, sort of at YU, and I think the Minyan, they used to say half Hallel at the end of davening, not part of davening. And no one's going to claim Rav Soloveitchik wasn't a Zionist. He was the head of a religious Zionist of America. Just the Rav, in his conservative, small C conservative view of halacha, he didn't believe in any changes in the halachic, you know, system. So that is an important point, that saying Hallel on Yom Ha'atzmaut doesn't have to be whether you support the state of Israel. Okay, Aline is raising what's being discussed a lot. It was discussed a little bit at our morning shir this morning by Malka Simkovitz, Hanukkah, the tie-in to Hanukkah and Sukkot.
And that's 100%. There's a lot of tie-in because Sukkot is the holiday that they couldn't celebrate because Beit HaMikdash was defiled. And Sukkot is the holiday they're trying to make up for when they rededicate the temple. And that's where you get the 8 days of Hanukkah are 100% modeled on the 8 days of Sukkot. And you see references to Sukkot throughout discussions of Hanukkah, whether it's how high the menorah has to be, or whether it's whether or not you can use the candles, being compared to whether or not you can use your Sukkah decorations, if they're fruit and they might be tasty, to whether you have more candles or fewer candles, and how that compares to the sacrifices, the bulls that are sacrificed on Sukkot. So there's actually a tremendous amount of deep connections between Hanukkah and Sukkot. And that also makes a lot of sense because we something that I'm always fascinated by, and this is kind of like the companion question to, are you ready to stand up and say a miracle just happened, is how do you set up a holiday? And Hanukkah and Purim is these rabbinic holidays. You know, it's a fascinating challenge to understand how you structure that. So the idea that there would be a biblical model for this rabbinic holiday makes a lot of sense.
I invite everybody to listen to Malka's talk this morning, where she raised the question of why it's true they didn't have Sukkot that year, but they didn't have, you know, Pesach either. So why didn't they want to connect Hanukkah to Pesach? But we're not going to go there. That was this morning's shiur. Okay. Susan raised the interesting question. I don't know that that works halachically, to say half challah for the holiday track and the other half for the miracle track, and two halves get a whole. But I don't think it's a sort of a cute idea, but that's not how the halachic system works, as I understand it.
Right. So we say the full Hallel on the first day of Pesach during the day, and we say the full Hallel on Shavuot, and we say the full Hallel each day of Sukkot. So those are holiday track recitations. So that's why that wouldn't be our solution. The truth is, the whole question, half Hallel, which is its own world, is just it's fascinating that it exists. Because it's again, it's not a full Hallel, and yet Ashkenazim at least make a bracha over it. And, you know, what are we doing? What are we trying to do by saying that half Hallel, or what would we be missing by not integrating a sort of like almost Hallel, even where it's not clearly mandated, is fascinating. Or even just back to Hanukkah, what dimension can be added to your Hanukkah, or is added to your Hanukkah by reciting Hallel? And if it's not there, remember, there's no Musaf on Hanukkah. You can't say Musaf. There was no Korban Musaf. There's no Musaf. If there's no, you know, so you have Alanisim. But that would basically be Alanisim and lighting candles. Hallel is a major moment in Hanukkah. Okay,
well. Okay, so I want to know, Afheim, why don't they discuss Afheim Yubato and Ace in relationship to Hallel? They discuss it in relation to Ken, okay?
So that's a great mystery. That is the great mystery. So the closest we come is we have the discussion in the Tosfot and Sukkah, but it's not there in the Talmud, and I don't know why. And I think the Rabbanim who say that in fact women should be obligated based on Afheim would say that it's implicit, that it's just an extension of what we are already applying to, like, if you're already doing it for laying candles, then obviously you're saying Hallel. Whereas the Rabbanim who say you don't would say, no, we need to have one din for Hallel. The law for Hallel has to be consistent across the board. No matter what the scenario, we're not going to make exceptions. But yeah, it's a funny thing that it doesn't show up there explicitly.
Okay, I'm not sure exactly, Susan, what you're referring to. What do you want to derive from the fact that Hallel, in other words, learn some of the halachas from the Megillah. What in terms that the women are mechuyev in Megillah and Megillah is Hallel, so therefore women should be chayev. I'm not sure if that's...
Yes, that's what I meant.
Okay.
Couldn't we learn it out that way?
So potentially we could. Again, that would require us committing to the idea that the Megillah is in place of Hallel, which is a very compelling idea, but it's not universal. So it's a possible proof, but it's not a knockdown 100% proof.
Okay, I think there's a whole discussion who this Rashi might be referring to in Afheim Ayuboto Hanes. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Raping versus sleep. In other words, they were raping the woman. Okay, yes.
Thank you.
Yes, okay. They didn't save. That's what I missed here. Okay.
Yeah, here's Levi saving their sister again. Is there's a lot to that, actually. It's a whole other thing. But you know, the Kohanim are, of course, descendants of Shevet Levi. And Levi first distinguishes himself in the story of Dinah. The Midrash that we didn't read in detail, in fact, compares the plight of the woman who is facing, the woman who sparks the revolt, to the plight of Dinah. She actually says to her brothers, why can't you be like Shimon and Levi? Those were only two brothers. There are more Maccabee brothers than two. Why? And they wiped out a whole community, and yet you're going to leave me here. It's such a loaded story, and I think it's so poignant today when there's so much discussion of sexual politics and just this idea that the revolt, at least according to some traditions, that would be sparked by this issue, but that a woman herself would be the one to stand up and spark it and say, you can't just accept this anymore, it has to stop, is very resonant with so much of what's going on. Yeah.
Okay, Ellen raising the notion it's true. There generally are no brachot. Well, mishloach manov matonav yolim. In general, we never make a bracha on mitzvah ben adam lechaveiro. There's no bracha on staka. That is discussed by many. Laura, if you want to comment on that.
We say the we're supposed to keep them in mind when we're saying other brachot, but they are their own mitzvah. So as Rabbi Jay already suggested, it may be that the reason with Mishloach Manot and Matanat Levyanim has to do with the fact that they are Ben Adam L'Chaviro, where the Rashba says that has to do with the fact it's a third party. So like you can try to give the tzedakah, but you can't necessarily control whether someone's receiving it. The same way you ever leave a Mishloach Manot for someone and then discover that they never got it, or they were away, or they got it only the day after Purim or something like that. So that wouldn't be... It's not always entirely in your hand to fulfill a mitzvah that way, so it might be distinct in that sense. So the Judith of the there's an interesting conflation that goes on in some of the sources. We didn't have time to look at all of them, but the Ron in particular, you have the source sheet, you can look back at it. The Ron in particular puts the stories together and says Cheese Judith is Maccabean revolt woman. He says they're one and the same. They're not necessarily the same. And the cheese there, of course, so many elements of the Yehudit story remind us of the Yael story, including the idea that dairy would put the enemy to sleep. It doesn't seem to have put my kids to sleep early tonight.
But. Yeah, if I may, I the other region... Many explain why there are no mitzvah, no bracha mitzvah ben adam lechaveiro. I shouldn't do the mitzvah because it's You know, how would it feel? I write you, let me go to the mikvah first, put on, you know, my gartel, and then I'll do the mitzvah. You do the mitzvah because it's the right thing to do. I shouldn't use you as an object for my fulfillment to God. I think it's a very important idea in the mitzvah of tzedakah. We do it because it's right, not because it's, quote unquote, a mitzvah, and we make a bracha. But that's another discussion, but that's how some of the Achronim anyways explain that. Okay, Hallel doesn't specifically mention Sukkot and Shavuot, Barbizan. I mean, it mentions in general. And we mentioned B'Tzeit Yisrael Mitzrayim because that's the basis of everything, but it's not holiday specific, if I can say that. Ilana,
so I think that's a good point because of the Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. I'm assuming that you're referring to there where he says, well, Hallel should be different on Hanukkah from lighting candles because candle lighting is specific to Hanukkah, whereas Hallel is not. And you're right, it's not necessarily explicit. You could probably see some hints within the Hallel that we say to the stories of Sukkot and Shavuot. And of course, those stories themselves are so inherently linked to start with Yetziat Mitzrayim that it's a little... It's a partial answer as well, right? In other words, why do we sit in the sukkah, right? Shavuot is the culmination of leaving Egypt. So, you know, you kind of have it in there anyway. You're right. It's not as clear. It's not a perfect answer that he gives.
I think some of the Rishonim assume Apeme Yubato Ones is only on a rabbinic mitzvah. You never say Apeme Yubato Ones on a biblical mitzvah.
Generally speaking, yes. So that would mean that for someone like Ramban who wants to say that there's a Torah level basis to Hallel, so this argument wouldn't necessarily fly. Usually offhand is only going to be applied to rabbinic level mitzvah.
Right. Okay, I'm not sure what Ilana is referring to, the well-kept secret, because the Ramban is so much more well-known, or could there be some issue of claims?
I think I do. It was one of the reasons why this shiur is important to me. I think most women go through their lives having no idea that there are opinions that women are obligated to say Hallel on Hanukkah. It's just not known. And also even Hallel on Pesach night, it's not necessarily known that it's obligatory. And I think it's an important thing to know. Now, again, in the case of Hallel on Hanukkah, there's plenty of opinions to rely on not to say it. But there's still, at least I can speak for myself personally, that once I learned this, when I say Hallel on Hanukkah, I feel different now when I say it because it's not just my usual thing. It's, wow, this is one of my opportunities a year, not just to fulfill this mitzvah, but I might really be fully obligated to do it. That's, you know, that's special. And there's a reason why that's special, you know, and then you start thinking about all the different things we were talking about with the miracle. So it's made a big difference in my personal Hanukkah observance, which is one of the reasons I like spreading this particular possibility in Torah.
Okay, someone emailed me here privately, but by Hanukkah candles, whether the husband and wife lights their own or separate, that's Rav Soloveitchik suggests that they should light their own, or do you say Ishto Kagupo? And when that doesn't, I mean, that's just, that was your question at the beginning. How many women light their own menorah? And it's interesting to see. I would assume today it's much more than it used to be. I imagine for my generation and our parents' generation, my mother never lit the menorah. It would never enter her mind that she entered the menorah. Like my father lit the menorah and all the kids, and my sister, but not my mother. Like husband and wife went together. Today, it's a different, we live in a different world, of course. We didn't have women giving shiurim 50 years ago. That was a man gave the shiur for woman's chayav. You have a woman giving a shiur for woman's chayav.
You might have, but it would be in a different...
Very few.
Fewer women give shiurim, but in a different context. Let's say, like this.
Yeah. Baruch Hashem, there are many women today who can give shiurim. Baruch Hashem. Okay. Somebody asking about an agricultural component to seizing out the harvest of olives. Rabbi Liptak spoke about that. I believe the Mishnah Bikurim speaks about that. Yes, there is some aspect, but we don't really have time to get into it unless Lori wants to comment very, very quickly. Okay.
I think you're right. It's a funny thing that Hanukkah winds up getting stuck in the Gemara, and then the Gemara it has to backtrack and explain how it's there. It comes up with different criteria when you would say Hallel and when you wouldn't, and Hanukkah just doesn't fit into any of the criteria. And they have to say ultimately, yeah, it is on the miracle track, but we listed it here. It's still the full Hallel. And I think that does also connect to the connection to Sukkot. And I think it connects to wanting to firmly establish it as a proper holiday and how we can do that. Remember, we can't have an Isser Malacha on Hanukkah, right? Or that's not something that Chazal enact, except maybe when the candles are lit.
Okay. Yeah, somebody commenting, everybody who has women are obligated in prayer. In other words, there is, of course, women have to daven. So you could say halal in isolation. That was one of the questions, but that's not because women don't have to daven. Just they may not daven. But
first of all, hi, Sarah. I don't see you, but it's nice to hear your voice on chat.
Hi.
Let me think about this. Now we get to hear you too. Now I'm just thinking about what you're writing. Okay, so it's interesting, right? So with tefillah, we say that there's an opinion that women are obligated only to say kind of informal words of, which is to which Sarah is referring, only informal words of praise, request, and thanks every day. That actually, there's a lot of opinions that women, in fact, are obligated to say Shmoneh Esrei at least twice a day. It's true. I think part of why, I think I would put slightly different from how you're putting it, though. I think part of what's going on here is, on the one hand, the Gemara is already suggesting a possibility that that there are women out there who know how to say halal and their husbands don't. And on the other hand, it would be hard to fathom, in a world where women are not necessarily literate, or even a world in which women are literate in Hebrew but are not necessarily davening on a regular basis, to start saying that there's an expectation that a woman says halal every day for 8 days straight would seem a little difficult, right? In other words, if we're thinking about what would be reasons for not expressing this halacha, so one would be, again, of course, that there are poskim who say that women are exempt. Done, right? Follow the Magen Avraham, you follow Magen Avraham. Right? There's nothing else to talk about. If you don't have to say halal, you don't have to say it. But another reason not to further explore this possibility is, if the general perception is that women are not davening formal liturgy, it would seem off to start talking about, oh, but you're going to start saying halal, right? And I think maybe, and so it probably really makes sense, you know, and it represents that this is really appropriate for our time, that we are in a day and age where, thank God, we have increasing women who are Jewish literate and are reciting Shmoneh Esrei on a regular basis. And in that case, this possibility is no longer something that seems like pie in the sky and totally remote, or just like a theoretical rabbinic discussion that we don't necessarily follow because we have other opinions to rely on. It becomes something that's, I think, a lot more practically accessible to a lot of women. And like I said, at least for myself, this has transformed my Hanukkah. I have a different Hanukkah now. Now that I understand that at least according to some authorities, it's an obligation for me to say halal. It means something different to me personally, and it might for some other people. And that's something that maybe it's possible that 50 years ago wouldn't be relevant to say. And I wouldn't want to say it now in a way that would make someone feel bad if she's not going to manage the daven, or if that's difficult for her, because of course there's what to rely on. And yet it's a possibility.
Okay, I think we covered pretty much all the questions. We'll let you go. It's already nearing 10:30 in Israel. It's I hope that the kids are asleep, aren't asleep. I hope so.
Not quite. You know, there's no school tomorrow. So what can you do?
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much. We look forward to seeing you next week.
All of you.
On Mechitza, right? Next week.
We get started with Mechitza, Bezrat Hashem.
Lots of angles to discuss that question, the historical, whatever. Okay, we'll wait till next week. This evening, 8 p.m., Moshe Sokolov on the Haftorah of the Week. Everybody's invited. That's officially part of the Hanukkah series. It'll be the regular logon. I'll send it to you, that we've been using for the other shiurim. And tomorrow, two shiurim, 11 a.m., Antiochus decrees Hirshian Orthodoxy in German Jewry on the eve of the Holocaust. Daniel Schwartz, professor of history at the Hebrew University. And I'll be giving the Parsha to Shir Miketz. I'm not sure if that's part of the Hanukkah series or part of the Parsha series. If you want to know, come and find out. That'll be 8:30 tomorrow night. That's I'll be giving the Shir this week. And we look forward to learning with you and seeing you, everybody. Be well. And thank you very much. Okay, have a wonderful day.
Okay, thank you all so much.